Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for taking the time to watch and listen today. I'm joined by the Minister for Health and Social Care, David Ashford, and our Director of Public Health, Dr. Henrietta Ewart. We are back at the podium sooner than I had indicated at the briefing held on Thursday. Since then, the situation in the United Kingdom has changed considerably, with a rapid deterioration in the COVID position there. On Sunday, over 35,000 people in the United Kingdom tested positive for COVID-19 in a single day, the highest daily total since the start of the pandemic. On Wednesday, the total number of people in the United Kingdom to have tested positive for the virus surpassed 2 million. Looking at recent data from the United Kingdom, the impact that a second national lockdown in England had on suppressing the virus in November is clearly evident. A new tiered system of restrictions was brought in at the end of the second lockdown, with many areas of the country placed in Tier 3, the tightest in terms of restrictions. Despite this, the virus has once again taken hold, creating a new spike and that record number of infections. The cause of this is now becoming clear. On Monday the 14th of December, the United Kingdom's Secretary of State for Health and Social Care announced in Parliament the detection of a new variant of the virus, one that is, potentially, up to 70% more likely to be transmitted between people because of the way the virus has mutated. Thankfully, there are no indications yet that the variant results in symptoms being any worse or that the new vaccines are not effective in protecting against the mutated form of COVID-19. Nonetheless, the variant is resulting in the more rapid spread of the virus, particularly in the south and east of England, although it is now clear that the variant has spread throughout the United Kingdom. Unchecked, the likelihood of more people having the virus at a single point in time is greatly increased, with the potential to place severe pressure on hospital services and potentially overwhelm the NHS. As a result, on Saturday, the UK Prime Minister announced a new fourth tier of restrictions for England, effectively returning many parts back to lockdown. Wales entered lockdown on Saturday, whilst mainland Scotland and Northern Ireland will follow suit on Boxing Day. It also seems increasingly likely that more parts of England will see a move to Tier 4. Arrangements to relax restrictions over Christmas have largely been withdrawn, with no mixing of households permitted in the new Tier 4 areas of England, whilst in the rest of the United Kingdom, relaxed restrictions will only apply on Christmas Day. Travel within the United Kingdom is severely restricted. People in Tier 4 areas of England must stay at home, apart from in a limited number of circumstances. Across the rest of the United Kingdom, everyone is being encouraged to stay local this Christmas. There is clearly serious concern in the scientific community about this new variant of COVID-19. The United Kingdom is working closely with the World Health Organization, sharing its findings and research. Despite this concern, context is king. Viruses naturally mutate. It is why we have to vaccinate against flu every year. And COVID-19 has been mutating since it was first detected. So this news in itself is not unusual or a cause for alarm. It's also important to bear in mind that the United Kingdom is particularly strong at genomics in the fight against COVID-19. That is the study of the genome of the virus, its RNA, and monitoring and analysing changes. This is precisely how this particular mutation and its spread has been identified. I will now hand over to Dr. Ewart to talk more about the science. Henrietta.
Thank you, Chief Minister. Yes, as Chief Minister alluded to there, the United Kingdom has a very sophisticated genomic surveillance programme, which has been running for many months now across a number of laboratories, who routinely test samples of positive COVID swabs for the genomics of the virus that was doing the infecting in that particular case. And again, as the Chief Minister said, mutation is something that viruses do, and there have been over 1,000 different mutations previously identified for COVID, which is usually of academic interest, and it's also useful for actually tracking patterns of spread. One can see, for example, that the early viruses that initially affected the United Kingdom and indeed the island came from Spain and from some of the northern Italian ski resorts, for example. However, this new mutation, this new variant, is more concerning for a number of reasons. The main one being that the variant actually has 14 separate mutations that characterise it, which is many more than one would usually find. 7 of those mutations actually sit on the spike protein, or code for the spike protein of the virus. And the spike protein is the bit of the virus that helps the virus stick onto human cells and then get into them and infect them. So that's why it's linked to increased transmissibility. So far, as Chief Minister said, there is no evidence that increased transmissibility links to increased severity of illness. So that is good news, but obviously the transmission itself is a problem. And one of the other things that is an emerging concern is that the new variant seems to be better at infecting children. Children to date have been largely resistant to COVID and have not caught it at anything like the rate of older children, teenagers and adults. But it looks as though that may not be the case with this variant. And obviously, if that does prove to be the case, there will be implications there for how schools are managed to prevent schools becoming drivers of infection in localities. So, as Chief Minister said, the virus variation was initially associated with the southeast, London, and now the east of England. The hypotheses there are either that it is the change to the variant and its higher transmissibility that has driven the outbreaks there and enabled those outbreaks to spread even during the last lockdown. The alternative hypothesis is that there is something about the behaviour of people in those areas that means that they didn't conform to the lockdown and that this particular variant just happens to be associated with that. It looks as though increased transmissibility is going to be what we find with this virus, but that is subject to confirmation. In any event, it's now been identified the length and breadth of certainly England and up into Glasgow in Scotland and also across into Wales. So it will only be a matter of time before the sporadic imported cases that we see here will likely include the variant. And if it is highly transmissible, more transmissible than usual, that is a particular risk for us because, as you all know, we are currently able to live life without any of the restrictions that would reduce transmission by social distancing, face mask wearing and so on. So the implication of that is that we have to be extremely vigilant. If we have been instructed to self-isolate for any reason, we must be extremely vigilant about that. Because, to put it bluntly, it would only take one to seed a transmissible variant and we would then see a resurgence of community transmission and all that goes with that. Okay. Thank you, Chief Minister.
And thank you very much, Henrietta. So it's clear that this is a complex and evolving situation. So what does this mean for the Isle of Man? You will have seen reports in the news of a growing number of countries temporarily banning travel from the United Kingdom, such as the concern over this COVID-19 variant. We too need to consider the risks that this variant poses to public health on our island. Yesterday, the Council of Ministers met to discuss the situation in the United Kingdom and what response, if any, was required here on the Isle of Man. Whenever we review our response to COVID-19, the Council of Ministers returns to its 4 primary policy principles, which are to protect life, maintain our critical national infrastructure, maintain public safety, confidence and welfare, and to support a controlled return to normality, balancing the social and economic impacts against the risk to health. These principles have guided our actions to date and will continue to do so. The assessment from officials has demonstrated a clear cause for concern on the potential impact a more virulent strain of the virus could have on our island community. The key to protecting life is not just preventing the virus from spreading in our community, but, crucially, ensuring that we have sufficient medical resources available to care for those who become ill due to COVID-19. Winter is always the most challenging and busiest time for health services around the globe. This year is no different, and our hospitals and wider health and care services are feeling the strain of winter pressures. The Department of Health and Social Care have already activated its winter programme. Given the situation and the reasons I have set out, it is clear to the Council of Ministers that action is required to shore up our defences given the rapid spread of the new variant in the United Kingdom. Although we are only seeing a handful of sporadic COVID cases, and even though they are being detected in isolation, it is inevitable that the mutated virus will make its way to the Isle of Man. The question then is, what steps can we take to mitigate the risk posed by the virus in its more virulent form, with a 70% increase in the likelihood of transmission? The Council of Ministers has carefully considered the risks posed by the new strain of the virus, the options available to us, and the impact these decisions may have. We have determined that the island will remain on level 4 of the borders framework. There will not be a return to level 5 at this stage. That said, we have identified a number of areas where we can tighten controls to provide our community with added protection. For people who are not already in possession of an exemption certificate or direction notice, a number of measures will come into force for people arriving on the island from 1 minute past midnight tonight. Firstly, the rules for non-residents travelling to our island. All categories of exemptions granting permission for non-residents to travel to the island are suspended, except for future applications in the following three categories. First, the maintenance of critical national infrastructure. Secondly, the provision of health and social care. And thirdly, circumstances where an exception is in the public interest. Those who have already been issued with an exemption certificate will be permitted to travel to the island. To be clear, these certificates are not being revoked and existing conditions apply. But no new exemptions, except in the three categories I've just outlined, will now be permitted from this point onwards. To be clear, this includes exemption certificates issued on compassionate grounds. With immediate effect, we are temporarily suspending new applications for travel to the island for compassionate grounds. Those already in the system but not yet reviewed will be processed, and those already granted will be honoured. Secondly, while strict protocols are already in place to prevent the spread of the virus from visiting key workers, such as social distancing, face masks, self-isolation outside of working times, from tomorrow, all of those arriving on an exemption will be required to have a test for COVID-19 following their arrival on island. Thirdly, from tomorrow, all those arriving in possession of an exemption certificate will be no longer be permitted to undertake exercise. Fourthly, any amendments people have been granted to their self-isolation requirement are revoked and disallowed with effect from tomorrow. Turning now to measures for returning residents and what the Council of Ministers has decided. Firstly, we are introducing a new testing regime with a test following arrival and a second test on day 13 of self-isolation. If the day 13 test is negative, residents will be able to leave self-isolation on day 14. If the test is positive, the period of isolation will be extended by a further 14 days. Those who do not wish to undergo testing will be required to self-isolate for 21 days. The cost of both tests combined will be £50. Tests can be booked by calling the COVID 111 service. There has always been a risk that 1% of people could still be carrying the virus after 14 days of self-isolation. This has previously been a small but acceptable risk. The changing nature of the virus and the virulence of the new strain change the nature of this risk. The Council of Ministers feel that it is prudent to be certain that those self-isolating are free from the virus before leaving self-isolation. The confirmation of a negative test result or the extended isolation period for those who do not wish to be tested provide added assurance that the virus is likely to have been eliminated. Secondly, as with non-residents, those in self-isolation arriving after 1 minute past midnight will no longer be able to leave their accommodation to exercise. You must stay at home. Thirdly, the Day 7 test pathway, available for patient transfers and UK-based Isle of Man resident key workers, will also be suspended. To summarise, these new measures apply to those arriving on the island from tomorrow onwards. If you are already here and already self-isolating, the rules do not change. If you are already in possession of an exemption certificate or direction notice, the rules do not change. Many of our residents have now returned home, and it is clear that over the next 2 weeks, the anticipated travel volumes are likely to be less than they have been. I also expect many people who had planned to travel to review this in light of the changing situation. I do appreciate these changes will be unwelcome to some, and the message I would like to give everyone who plans to travelling away is to think carefully and only to do so in exceptional circumstances. Our borders remain our principal line of defence. The Council of Ministers was determined not to have a knee-jerk reaction to the latest developments, but we are keenly aware of the responsibility we have to respond to new and emerging threats. We determined that further strengthening our borders, albeit on a temporary basis, to be the most appropriate course of action. We hope that these changes will be short-term, with a view to reverting back to our current position as swiftly as possible. The Council of Ministers will review the situation in 2 weeks' time. With a number of countries suspending people travelling from the United Kingdom, notably France, there has been an impact on the flow of goods. This is causing understandable concern as we approach Christmas. However, the supply chain is robust and rest assured that your Christmas dinner is safe. We work closely with partners on Ireland and with the UK government and have been in discussions in recent days and again this morning. Most food for Christmas is now either already in store or is waiting in regional distribution centres. There is no need for panic buying, and all reports show adequate supply, including here on the island. We may see some impact next week because of the 48-hour suspension of freight between the United Kingdom and France, but this will likely extend only to salad, citrus and soft fruits and some out-of-season vegetables. So please do shop responsibly and thoughtfully. There is plenty of food and supplies and no cause for concern. Whilst the focus of today's briefing is on the changing situation in the United Kingdom and our border measures, I do want to touch upon our COVID vaccination programme. Our intention is to start the vaccination programme in earnest on Monday the 4th of January. I have said before that this is not a race. This is too important to rush. We have a responsibility to get it right. I would like to invite Minister Ashford to go into a little more detail on where we are up to and what our plans are. David.
Thank you, Chief Minister. As the Chief Minister has just said, the vaccination programme will commence on the 4th of January. While I am personally a bit saddened we couldn't start this Monday, it is important that this is done right. We mustn't lose sight of the fact that at the end of the day, this is a medical procedure and we have to ensure that everything from the logistics, which is a project in its own right, to the protocols around how the vaccine is handled and mixed to the delivery itself is absolutely spot on and also right. it must not be treated any differently to any other public health programme we have to undertake, and we must ensure that all the processes as per normal are followed. The indemnity was received from the UK late last Thursday and was then considered by the Vaccine Project Board on Friday. There were several queries raised from that, which we raised with the UK, with answers coming back late on Friday. The Vaccination Board, quite rightly, then had to consider the protocols around the storage and delivery of the vaccine, which again we only recently got from the UK, and how that interacted with everything else around the logistics. So that left us with little time before the Monday. We also have to remember that the trays can't be split, something again we learnt only a few weeks ago. So once defrosted, all 975 in a tray must be used within 5 days. The logistics of this, with Christmas Eve being the Thursday of this week and Christmas Day the Friday, and then the same with New Year next week, means that on reflection, it is sensible to commence from the 4th when we have the assurance of a full operational week. The registration and consent process for the first tranche of vaccine has already started, and so we have the lists ready to go on the week commencing the 4th of January. If people want more information on the vaccine and the rollout, there is a dedicated webpage, and that can be found at www.gov.im/COVID-vaccine. Thank you, Chief Minister.
Thank you, David. And now to questions from the media. And first I have is Sam Turton from Jeff the Mongoose. Good afternoon, Sam. Fast am I,
Chief Minister. Obviously, there'll be a lot here for people to take in. But I just wondered if we could start with, previously we've looked at resourcing issues within the department for what would be border testing. Border testing is now going to be also at the same time as vaccination rollout beginning and everything else. Mr. Ashford, how confident are you that the department is able to carry out all this extra work?
We wouldn't be doing it if we weren't confident, Sam. We have the existing swabbing team. There is capacity within that team for us to actually do the testing at day on arrival and also day 19 and carry on our day-to-day surveillance as well. We've been speaking about this, and we wouldn't have been the recommendation to Council of Ministers if DHSC was not absolutely confident that we can deliver this.
Can I also add in, Sam, that the testing will be at the TT grandstand as per normal for the first test and the second test. And I think I've mentioned in previous conferences that we were looking at possibly amending our regime in the new year if things have gone better. And we were looking at doing testing day one, potentially day 10 there. So the process had already been put in place and was being worked on for that. So therefore, a lot of the planning had already been done, Sam. Your second question, Sam.
With the charge for £50 for two tests, first of all, just how easy are you with that? Because this creates two tiers, essentially, of those who can and those who can't. But also, Will the £50 charge also include people on patient transfer who otherwise could find themselves stuck in a permanent, basically stuck at home?
Yeah, no. People travelling for medical reasons will not be charged. So that's the first one, and the first point of your thing. If there are clear financial difficulties, then this is something we will look at. But then equally, if you can afford to travel, we're only asking you to pay about half of the cost. Of the cost to the taxpayer. So those who choose to travel are causing a cost. I mean, we looked at maybe doing this for nothing, but the taxpayer, the people of the Isle of Man, have lost a significant amount of money as a result of COVID, and we felt that asking people who choose to travel to pay a contribution towards the cost was the fairest way forward.
Thank you, Chief Minister.
Thank you very much, Sam. We now move on to Leanne Cook from 3FM. Good afternoon, Leanne. Fast am I.
Good afternoon. My first question, you've said yourself it's inevitable that the new variant of COVID will reach the island. Could the new strain, as Dr. Henrietta Hewitt said, looks to affect children more than the previous, change the way the vaccine is going to be rolled out, for example, in regards to priority groups?
Rightly, I think I'll ask David or Henrietta or both to answer that one.
Yeah, if I'll come in first and then I'll invite the Director of Public Health in, if I may. The thing we've got to be clear on is my understanding is, although it affects children more than the other strain, it doesn't affect them any more than adults. So what we had with the previous strain was that children were very low transmitters, it appeared to be the case. With this strain, it's actually putting them on an equal footing with adults. So it's not saying they're more infectious than adults, it's saying they're on an equal footing. But obviously when it comes to children, they tend to mix more than we do as adults. So that's where the transmission risk is from my point of view. But I'll bring the Director of Public Health in.
Thank you. Yes, the objective of the vaccination is to prevent serious illness and death. So the priority groups have been chosen as being those groups that are most at risk of serious illness and death if they get infected. As Chief Minister and Minister Ashford have been saying, and as I think I touched on before, the new variant does not seem to make people any more ill than the existing variants, and therefore there would be no reason to realign the priority groups because we're still going with that objective of protecting people from serious illness and death.
Okay, thank you. And my second question, just as Sam touched upon, because there was quite a lot of information to process, can you just clarify how this will affect travel for students returning to university after Christmas?
Well, obviously, Leanne, we are reviewing the situation. So there is nothing to stop, technically, our students from leaving the island after Christmas to go to their respective universities. That said, if the UK still have Tier 4 restrictions in those areas, we will have to check to see whether they would be allowed to travel back to their accommodation to carry on their studies. I know an awful lot of students are thinking of staying on the island and doing it online because they haven't been getting face-to-face lectures anyway. So that's information that we do not know how our students will be able to travel in the United Kingdom in the new year, but obviously we'll speak to the United Kingdom. Obviously we'll have to look at the situation. I've said we're reviewing it in 2 weeks' time. That's long before our students will be going back given the current restrictions in the UK. Thank you very much, okay. Liam.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have is Paul Moulton from Isle of Man Television. Good afternoon, Paul. Fast am I. You might want to take yourself off mute.
Sometimes it's done bias. Okay. Some surprise maybe for some people that the day one testing has finally come in because we've been asking about that for months and months and months, and now it is here. But the surprise could be that the testing is staying in place at the TT grandstand. Now, this potentially means people are moving from the airport up there, could be on the day. If they arrive after hours, they'll have to go up the next day. Isn't that something that other jurisdictions are testing at the point of entry, which is very important if you think this is, you know, so potentially spreadable now?
Yeah, it's a good point, Paul. I think I'll ask Henrietta to answer that one.
Yes, it is a good point. The issue is the cost of actually setting up facilities at the ports of arrival to do that testing. And I think we've touched on it before in these sessions that Guernsey, for example, had to invest £3.6 million to do that. So the issue is we don't have the time to do that. Obviously, that's quite a big infrastructure and logistics issue to build a safe facility for doing the testing at the port. The last thing you want is everybody off an individual flight or ferry congregating close together while they wait for tests, since you're actually setting up a potential super spreader event by doing that. So the better option is to manage safe transit of people to the grandstand and then safe swabbing with all the usual precautions and mitigations that the swabbing team at the grandstand are now very experienced in delivering. And that, on current assessment and given the time frame that we have to work to, is the better of the options.
Paul, it's worth pointing out that it's a very slick operation going up to the grandstand. It's, everyone knows how it works. It works well, and therefore, we've been advised that this is on the balance the best way to go forward. Sorry, Paul, you wanted to say something.
I was trying to clarify the hours because could some people arrive in boats late in the evening, therefore have to go home, then go back the next day to have that test? And
yeah.
Same with the airport,
yeah.
Or you have it open, for all arrivals on those days?
No, it's open in the morning till 12 o'clock. is my understanding. So if you arrive on the late boat, you will have to go home and then come in the morning. I don't know, David, if you want to expand on that.
Yeah, it just follows on from the question that Sam asked when we mentioned about logistics and staffing within DHSC. You have to remember as well, Paul, that it's not just the infrastructure and the logistics putting in. We have to staff that as well. So if we were doing the testing actually at the airport, actually at the sea terminal, and of course we'd still need to continue the grandstand for our normal monitoring anyway, that's three different logistical swabbing teams. Now, one of the fortunate situations we are in the island is most of our medical services have returned back to normal, and we have got winter pressures within the service as it is. It would mean me pulling staff across DHSC from elsewhere in order to form those swabbing teams, and it would mean us having to suspend everyday health services. So there's getting a balance as well. There's a balance between delivering our day-to-day COVID response, but also ensuring that people can get the day-to-day care that they require too within DHSC, because that can have just as much health impact as COVID-19 if it's not delivered.
I think also, Paul, you need to take into account that this is only a temporary measure. We are reviewing in 2 weeks' time. Now, if the situation has improved, we'll be going back to our well-tested and tried system of people coming back to the island as they do as of now, or we may have to toughen up those restrictions. We just don't know. So implementing massive change where we may have to reduce the services in the rest of our health and social care setting, it's felt that the testing procedure to carry on at the grandstand is the best way forward.
Okay, and you were saying that 14 days was a gold standard and a 99.6% chance that everything's going to be detected. Now you're bringing in a three-week rule for people who don't want to be swabbed. Is that just purely a carrot and stick on this, basically? You're almost putting an extra week on people who won't be tested, and there's actually no science behind it?
Well, no, if there... Historically, the 1% of cases getting out in the community as a result of going by the 14 days, we felt was a risk worth taking because that was seen as the gold standard. Now, however, we're seeing the potential for this new variant to have a 70% increase in infecting people, and therefore we were looking at a higher percentage of people potentially travelling to the island with the virus, whether that's... And if you're asymptomatic, you don't know you've got it, and therefore you could pass that on. So when you've got that increased risk, and if you're not prepared to take the test, then we have to be safe and say, right, well, you'll have to wait the extra week just to ensure that you haven't got the virus. So it is a precaution given the significant increase in the infection rate as a result of this variant, Paul. Thank you very much. Right, we now move on to Simon Richardson from Business 365. Good afternoon, Simon. Fastamai.
Good afternoon. My first question, if I may, is for Dr. Ewart. With 14, you explained there are 14 mutations with the latest COVID variant. What is the realistic likelihood of further mutations beyond the range and capabilities of any of the vaccines that have so far been approved for use?
Yes, that's a possibility, and that would get us into the scenario that we have anyway with flu vaccines. Fortunately, the technologies by which the COVID vaccines are manufactured are actually very amenable to tweaking in the way that we have to tweak the vaccines for flu. So where we could be heading there is really a similar scenario to what we have with the annual flu vaccines, that you have to tweak them each year to match the circulating strains.
Thank you. And my second is for the Health Minister, if possible, please. Thank you. And in the light of the latest news on the mutation in the virus, will this affect the protocols at the hospital in respect of further delays, maybe, for people waiting for non-urgent surgery?
No, there is no plans that at the moment it will affect the protocols, because we haven't seen any evidence of the new strain out in the community or any COVID out in the community. If the situation changed and the variant did get out in the community, then obviously we would have to reactivate all the protocols that we had previously in place at the hospital. The hospital has within A&E a split between a red zone and a green zone, which is still in place for those who might be presenting and showing COVID symptoms, and the guidance guidance is still there, that if anyone feels they have the onset of symptoms, they should ring 111. They shouldn't really be presenting to A&E or their GP. So that remains completely unchanged. I need to be clear that the reason there has been the suspension of elective surgery in orthopaedics is around bed pressures in Nobles. It has not got anything to do with COVID. It is to do with the winter pressures that the hospital is experiencing. Obviously, COVID and some of the things we've had to keep in place haven't helped with that, but it is down to winter pressures.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Simon. And now we move on to Tim Glover from Manx Radio. Good afternoon, Tim. Fastamai.
Fastamai. We're actually getting comments in that you've been not cautious enough for once here. The people are pointing out that nearly every EU state has stopped travel to the UK. Even Antarctica has COVID-19, and the newspapers across are saying schools could be closed in January, and also that Tier 4 is imminent for all of the UK in the new year. What would it take to move to level 5 here?
Well, I think we have said this is for 2 weeks, Tim, so we will be constantly monitoring, and if there is a worsening in the United Kingdom, and we are advised by our medics that we need to move back to level 5, then obviously that's something the Council of Ministers will take on board. I think if you follow the ripples of what we have done, we've banned people coming in for compassionate grounds, so that's taken a significant number of people out off the equation. We are making people now test on day one, test on day 13. You're not allowed to go out and exercise anymore. And that's for everyone, including people from patient transfers. So we have significantly increased the monitoring and the ability for the vaccine to get out in the island. If that's felt not to be enough, then we will, of course, review the decision and make changes. But at this moment in time, we feel that we didn't want to do a knee-jerk reaction, that we've put in place some pretty serious changes, and that should give the protection that we want to give to the people of the island.
And secondly, Dr. Henrietta Ewart mentioned about the UK and the expertise with genomics. The test will provide a positive or a negative, but how will we know whether the new strain is here on the island?
Right, well, I'm not qualified to answer that, so I don't know, David, if you want to, or we ask Henrietta.
Yeah, I can bring Henrietta in for anything she might want to add, but we, within DHSC, we do still have access to be able to test the genome of the viruses that are samples that we have. We will be able to filter in, using the UK, how we can actually test that to see what strain we've got.
Okay, Henrietta, do you want to add anything to that?
Yes, as Minister Ashford has said, that would depend on sending samples across to one of the UK centres for genomic testing. And that is something that our laboratory scientists and consultants have links into the networks for. So we will be able to explore access to that through those networks.
Thank you.
Okay, Tim. Thank you very much. Next, we have Adrian Derbyshire from Isle of Man Newspapers. Good afternoon, Adrian. Fastamai.
Good afternoon. Are the changes to key worker exemptions in part an acknowledgement that there were people who were granted certificates that weren't really here for critical national infrastructure or for preservation of life? Is that in part one of the reasons for the tightening up of the rules here?
No, not at all, Adrian. We have been obviously tightening up who gets the key workers regulations as a result of certain abuses in the past. So this has nothing to do with that in any way, shape or form. It is purely because of the mutation of the virus and the potential for the 70% in increase in infections. And that's why we've brought this rule in. We've tried to tighten up as much as possible. We're trying to protect the health of the nation, but also we're trying to ensure that we stay business as usual and life goes on. So it's a tricky balance. obviously, I've said before to Tim that we will be reviewing this in a fortnight's time. If there are tougher measures to bring in, then we won't hesitate to do that. But equally, if there can be a loosening because of an improved situation, we'll do that also. But we feel that we've got the balance right at this moment in time, but it's never in tablets of stone, and we will, of course, be reviewing this, Adrian.
And the second question is, there'll be quite a few families who have gone away for Christmas. What will be the impact of these changes on them? Could prove quite costly, I would have thought, for those who decide to go ahead with the test.
Yeah, well, for those families going away, they can get home. Simply, if we had gone to level five, which I know some people are suggesting we should have done, those people would have struggled to get back to the Isle of Man. So they are able to get back to the Isle of Man, but they will have to have the test on day one and day 13. And the £50 is only a percentage, it's only part of the cost to the taxpayer. The taxpayer will be picking up the rest of it. So, but if there are extreme hardships that can be proven, then I'm sure we will be able to help out. And I know a charity is offered to help out if someone is in specific financial difficulty.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Adrian. Next, we have Alex Bell from BBC Isle of Man. Good afternoon, Alex. Fastamai.
Good afternoon. I'm just wondering exactly how you define a key worker with public interest.
Well, I suppose if you had let's say the power station broke down and there was a specific part that needed fixing, if you've got major infrastructure work going on and it's got to be finished, then that is a key infrastructure. Obviously, the definitions will be published on our website at www.gov.forward/IM COVID-19. But that's it in a nutshell, really. If I don't know, I've mentioned the power station, but there are other areas where sadly we don't have the specific skills on the Isle of Man, and if we need to keep a machine going, say in Nobles Hospital, one of the scanning machines, and we need to bring people over, that's another example.
Would be critical national infrastructure and preservation of life, wouldn't they? Specifically, well, public interest seems to be something else.
Well, public interest is if it's really important that a person comes over to carry out a procedure or do a job on the Isle of Man, then the Chief Secretary has the powers to decide whether that is really necessary. We have tightened up on this over the last few months, and it's something, as I say, is in constant review. We're reviewing all of what we've announced today for 2 weeks' time. If things have worsened, we'll review and make changes. If it's improved, we'll review and make changes. So it's just for the next 2 weeks. Let's see what happens.
Okay. I'm struggling to see how that's much different from the previous key worker policy.
Well, we've amended some we haven't amended. So key workers now will have to have a test. If they're, obviously the health service is different, they'll have a test on day one and nearly every day if they're doing a job. On the Isle of Man, they weren't automatically having to have a test, the key workers. They will now have the day one test, and it will be tightening, you know, clearly who is allowed to come to the Isle of Man and whether the officers feel that it is national infrastructure. So, as I say, key national infrastructure, key works which are in the middle of being carried out will be looked at.
Thank you. Just in terms of a second question, I just wonder if you got a figure for us, how many people have come into the island on compassionate grounds?
Right, I haven't. I don't know, David, if you have the figures.
Yeah, in terms of compassionate grounds, the applications have obviously slowed down as we've gone into the Christmas period because nobody really wants to come over to the island and isolate over the Christmas period.
Yeah.
But the general average is around about 80 applications a week.
Okay. Well, are those all of them approved? What sort of ratio?
So that's in relation to the approvals.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
I think I'm trying to be helpful here, Alex. I think off the top of my head, there's about 180 have been approved, 60-something have already come over to the island, so there's about 120. We have said that as of now, there'll be no more dealt with. So if there was some already in the pipeline, we're trying to be fair to people here from when we've announced today. So we're not talking thousands of people coming over to the Isle of Man. It literally will be hundreds, and it'll be a smaller hundreds, because an awful lot of people who are planning to go and see family in the United Kingdom can't now travel in those restrictions can't now stay with those family members, so I'm sure they will have to revisit their plans and stay on the island.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much, Alex. And last but not least, we have Josh Stokes from ITV Granada. Good afternoon, Josh. Fastamai.
Good afternoon, Chief Minister. My first question for Dr. Ewart, please. Dr. Ewart, how likely is it that when the new strain reaches the Isle of Man, mask wearing, social distancing and other restrictions may be brought into place given the increased likelihood of this spread? And when would you start advising that this is the best step forward?
Well, the social distancing, the mask wearing and the other interventions come into play when and if we get a resumption of community transmission. If we just had one sporadic case, we would do as we do at the moment and try to close it down through wider testing of the contacts and then social isolation and control of them. And in fact, just by virtue of something being a variant and acknowledging that we won't always identify the variants because the testing requires to be sent away, it wouldn't be timely, etc., etc. So we can't manage it in real time in that way. We would expect to continue with the protocols that have served us well to date of testing, identification, wider testing to ensure we've looked at all the people that have, could have come in contact, which in the context of a returning traveller should be very few. Just close household contacts, and then containment of the transmission chain by management and self-isolation and exit testing of that group.
Okay, thank you. My second question to the Chief Minister. Chief Minister, you say many have travelled back to the island already, but there are Manx residents, including myself, currently in the UK, almost awaiting a Stage 5 decision. Given the rising worry of the new strain, how close were you to moving to Stage 5 today? And should people expect to maybe have to make a fleeting return to the island in the near future?
Well, we looked at the evidence that we were given. We had recommendations from the medics. We weren't close to moving to five because we felt that there were serious changes that we could make to our existing procedures to ensure that we reduce the risk to the people of the Isle of Man. I can't say never, that I can't rule out that in 2 weeks' time, it has, if it's significantly increased, that we will be forced to go to level five, but that will be in 2 weeks' time. And I think an awful lot of people will be putting off from now doing any travel to the United Kingdom, given that so large swathes of the United Kingdom are now clearly shut down. So we think the numbers will be decreasing. But I can't say come home straight away, and I can't guarantee that if you go away that you won't be facing a level five in the foreseeable future. But I mean, that unfortunately is what we're faced with. I can't give any guarantees on this. We do our best to give as much notice as possible to people. I've said unless you really, really need to do essential travel, I would advise you not to travel. If people want to take that risk, then that's their choice, really.
But do you have a rough idea of if you were to announce Stage 5, how long Manx residents would have to return to the island?
No, I'm afraid I always try and be helpful, Josh, and give people as much information as possible. But if you're faced with a rapidly changing situation, you've got to react quickly. I gave a press conference on Thursday where I had naively, and maybe I'd tempted fate, said that we won't be doing any more press conferences now to the new year. And along came the news on Saturday of what the Prime Minister was proposing to do in the United Kingdom. And we obviously felt, you know, I had meetings, discussions with the Chief Secretary over the weekend, emergency meetings on Monday. Here we are today with changes. So I'm afraid I can't give any guarantees to anyone who's off the island at the moment that more draconian measures won't be brought in place. I sincerely hope not. But if we feel we have to, we've never hesitated in the past.
OK, thank you.
Thank you very much, Josh. And thank you all very much for your questions. The events of the past few days are the latest in a series of twists and turns that have run throughout this year. I remain extremely proud of everything our community has achieved. As I've said time and time again, this success is down to you. I'm confident we can adapt once again in the changing circumstances around us and look to 2021 with optimism and hope. I would like to extend my best wishes, along with the team, to all of you for a happy and peaceful Christmas. Thank you all very much. That's all for today.